Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. It's been a while. Me and Harry are out in sunny Spain, in sunny Murcia. And we've got a very, very special guest with us today. Welcome to the show, the one and only Dan McCoy. Welcome, Dan.
Yo, you all right?
How are you, Dan? You okay?
Good, thank you.
All right.
First time I've ever been called special. I know why it's not.
No, it's not.
Dan is very special. His mum thinks he's very special too. Dan's special to us, though, isn't he?
You might gauge from Dan's accent that he's not from like down on south, and we're in sunny Murcia, and we need to find himself some shade because this guy's gonna crisp up pretty quickly, aren't you, man?
Yeah, we've not seen any sun. Well, it feels like forever, but it was June last year since we've seen any.
Yeah.
So yeah, not been good.
So I'm feeling a little bit guilty about being out here because I've looked on social media this morning and it's peeing down in England, isn't it? And it's so nice here. We've had a really nice breakfast. We might go and have a beer in a minute. We're going to play a spot of golf. Are you feeling guilty, Harry?
No, I don't feel guilty at all, actually. No, I'm over the moon that we're here.
Yeah.
But now I quite like the messages of it's raining at home. I like it. I don't want to go home, though. That's the problem.
Do you want to stay here, then?
I'm staying here. Yeah. We've already picked out the villa.
Yeah.
It's a little driving range. We're going to move the hub over, so we're going to replicate that, I think. We're staying put.
Oh, man, yeah, it's so nice, isn't it? It's so nice.
I need to find a job in the rank so I can join you out here.
100%.
Yeah, we're trying to find a job for Dan.
Definitely.
So, Dan. Tell the people about you. We know a little bit about you. We rate you as a golfer. For anybody that doesn't know you, then tell us a little bit about what's going on with you and your golf and where have you been? What's your journey look like? Wrap that up into 30 seconds.
Different. So I was always a proper club golfer, got down to plus two, turned pro, couple of course records under my belt, and I turned pro in October, which was nice.
Nice, man.
So I'm joining you two on the journey.
Yeah, I think Dan's downplayed that quite a lot.
Yeah, he's downplayed that a lot.
He's massively downplayed. Yeah. I mean, we know Dan very well. So we met a few years back on Neil Williams' trip. Hello, Neil. Hope you're listening. And now you've got quite a CV. I think Dan does, and he doesn't speak highly enough. So let's have the real truth. Where do we start? Who have we worked with? Obviously, you worked with me and Dave, and that's the biggest two highlights, obviously.
They are the highlights.
So go on, let's have the real version.
So I approached Simon Dyson in just after COVID. Got under his wing for some coaching, which is unbelievable and changed my game. Then I also worked a bit with Jamie Donaldson from Aimpoint. That was interesting and working out that theory, and it's definitely helped, but I need to follow that up a bit more. But yeah, it's been, golf opens a lot of doors, and I was privileged to work with Rick Shields right at the start as well.
There it is, there's the mic drop. We're waiting for that one. There we go, just slide that one in there. So how was it?
Good. He had an ambition to go and do something, and went and got it tenfold.
Yeah, fair play to him.
At the time, it was me and my golf that were up there with Mark Crossfield, and they were the two names. Mm. And I remember him saying, when I worked at Trafford with him, Trafford Golf Centre, that he wants to do this. And he went and absolutely smashed it out of the park. So fair play to him.
Good man. Well, what I was saying to you, Harry, wasn't it? Like, Dan's like a proper golfer. You know when some people sort of like command a little bit of respect? Not like us hellots. Do you know what I mean? Every time I look at Dan, I think, oh, there's a man that's like a proper golfer. Do you know what I mean? And I just kind of hack it round. Actually, no, that gives you an injustice because you're quite good as well.
Yeah, we had this chat yesterday.
Yeah,
didn't we?
I know.
So, yeah, we can expand.
You know when someone stripes it? And then when someone really, really stripes it and it sort of, you go, oh, and it sends like a little shudder up through you. This is my guy, isn't it?
Yeah, proper golfer.
Yeah, proper golfer. Yeah.
Yeah. Me and you can go and play bad, and it's a bad round, but Dan's bad round of golf isn't bad.
Yeah, he shot like one under and or something.
He's like, oh, I missed a few putts today. I only hit one fairway, and it's like, well, you still shot course record. well, I missed a few. It's one of those, and you just look at him and go, I don't like you anymore.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
like, how'd you get on? I shot 80.
Yeah, great. Hold everything.
You did say we were going to play golf after this.
Yeah.
Literally, we're going to have to put a post out later and update how the scores were.
Sure, yeah. Well, I think it'll be pretty definitive as to what people think, who people were.
I think we're fighting for last place here, aren't we?
Sure, yeah. Okay.
I think there's a forfeit on the line, though, isn't there, which we drunkenly agreed to last night. Mm. I'm sure hopefully everyone remembers that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we got a 36-hole scratch medal.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's the first thing to do on holiday, isn't it?
Yeah, no.
What a lovely thing to do on holiday.
No, we discussed a 36-hole scratch Stableford, haven't we?
Okay.
To keep it nice to everyone.
That'll be fun.
There's a few villas around here that I'm eyeing up, not to live in, but to potentially hit my golf ball into.
Yeah.
As we know, my golf is not in a good place right now, so.
Speaking of villas, as we're here and we're out on this lovely little veranda, we're doing a little bit of an inspection trip for our Fun in the Sun Volume 3 trip in October. Historically, we've done this in November. We're going to go late October. We're going to bring 36 golfers out to sunny Spain. Really nice time to come on a trip to get away from the madness that is the UK at that time of year. So what's your initial thoughts of way we've come to? So we flew into Murcia and then it's like 15 minutes down the road and we've turned up where are we, man? What's this place called?
The Torre.
Yes,
Hilton,
the Torre.
Doubletree location. Yes,
yeah.
Kind of a little world of its own here, isn't it? Very La Manga-like.
It feels La Manga-like, doesn't it? Yeah.
All on campus. So, no, it's good. Obviously, we've got golf course here. I think we're playing two more courses, aren't we?
Yep.
We're going to a visit for another one tomorrow. But we've got a course on site, which surrounds the whole hotel, the bars, the restaurants, which is wicked.
Mm.
Looking at somebody tee off on this lovely par three, which has got water everywhere.
Yeah, we're sat by a par three and a swimming pool. And it's a massive pond the whole way up to the green. And we looked at the pin position yesterday, and it's tucked back right, and then like 5 yards away from that is a massive pond, and it looks like everyone's in the pond yesterday, aren't they?
Yeah,
just these courses out here are so different to anything you experience in the UK, aren't they? And there's actually a little bit of a breeze today. It only looks about 150 yards, but it just looks really, really challenging. And from what I've seen of this golf course so far, there's those sort of big wasteland areas with all the palm trees and cactuses and stuff and whatever you're growing out of it, and a massive amount of bunkers. And anybody that's never played golf abroad, just it's a must, isn't it? Like, when you come to places like this, I've been in golf for a long time, and I come to somewhere here and I'm blown away by it. I just come to these sorts of courses and I think, this is what it's about. Don't trust me, I like the traditional England kind of Parkland course and links courses, because that's kind of what I know and what I've grown up on. But when you come to places like this, it just feels so special, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Well, you know me, I don't play golf in the UK.
Yeah.
I only play golf abroad, and there's a reason behind that. It's the weather, the golf courses, and I think it's just the whole start-to-finish procedure of play golf and sun, have a few drinks, the relaxed atmosphere. I mean, I was in Portugal last week, and one of the guys that came over, he turned around to me after 2 days, he goes, I completely understand why you don't play golf in the UK now. He said, this is amazing.
Yeah.
He's never played before abroad. That was his first time, and he gets it.
Yeah.
And it's tough to put your finger on what it is, because we're still playing golf in the sunshine, which we can do in June, July, August in the UK, hopefully. Probably can't in Blackpool though, Dan, can you?
No, it's probably still in Blackpool.
It's probably still got that dark cloud over it.
Always.
You guys know that I have a bit of a problem with like getting my legs out, because like I tan quick. Yeah, I tan quick up top, but then I end up with that squashy's tan, or a bit like a Neapolitan ice cream, where I'll go like proper chocolate on my arms, really vanilla on my biceps, and then really kind of strawberry on my shoulders, which is not a great look. But having said that, when that all blends up into one kind of niceness of brownness, my legs are like out of bounds post still, because they're quite skinny and they're as white as Harry's t-shirt. And when I try and play golf and I look down at my legs, they're a massive distraction for me, like a huge distraction. And I would argue they're probably a distraction for you guys as well, when you look at my legs and you think, how's this guy even like standing up? Do you know what I mean? I've got a real problem with that.
That's why I've done the same. I've not worn shorts since we were in Morocco. They've been in hibernation, so I put white shorts on this morning just to try and like blend in a little bit, so it doesn't make my legs stand out as much. Just I'm purposely packed the white shorts just for that reason.
Well, Harry's got a lovely colour, isn't he?
I don't know, is it racist or is it just a white man problem? Am I allowed to say that?
No, you're looking good, mate. I didn't see you for like 10 days and then you came back from Portugal and you had a lovely colour about you.
I changed nationality when I came back from Portugal.
Well, they thought you were Moroccan when you went to Morocco.
I did, Mustafa.
Yeah. They thought you
I wonder
were
if I'll be Spanish when I'm out here. What could my name be out here? Pablo.
That could be, couldn't it? Yeah, it could be. Dan definitely won't be.
Dan will not be. Dan looks like the Brit abroad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to put you with a one of those British flag kind of, when they put the little thing on their head. Tea towel thing.
Little,
a little handkerchief to the head, yeah. I would love that for a look for you.
We've had this chat before, but you remind me of Carl Pilkington.
Thanks.
You just do. Idiot abroad.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, do you not?
No.
Oh, you just really do.
You need to educate.
Yeah.
Okay, this will be fun.
He comes
right,
in the same place as well, aren't they? Your same similar accent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dan struggled with this, right, yesterday, didn't he? Because I said, I reckon I can do your voice, right? So I'm going to go, hello, Harry, you all right? Right, you, yeah, that was right, wasn't it, yeah?
That was a complete and utter bag of shite.
Right, go on then, right, you'll go.
Version,
right, you'll go. Come on, do me. Yeah, do me.
Hey, man, how you doing?
I sound like a chipmunk. Is that what I sound like?
I think hey, Dan's was closer than yours, actually.
Really?
I quite like that. That was good.
Hey, yeah. Man. Yeah, it wasn't until you said that yesterday, I realised I actually do say that all the time, yeah.
You do.
I do say that a lot, actually.
You do.
Do you know what I mean, man?
Even on text.
Do you know what I mean, man? I do, yeah.
You don't get a text off you. Hey, man.
Yeah. You know, I have that. I've stopped doing this, by the way, now. But like on all of my videos historically, it wasn't ever planned. But I've always started my intro as like, "Hey, all right," like that. Yeah, I was at Fleet Station, right, having a wee, and I heard somebody go, "Hey, all right," like that. I was like, "Oh, okay, that sounds like somebody doing a rip-off version of me," right? So I turned around. I was having a pee, and I turned around. There was a guy there, cladded in FootJoy from head to toe with a tightless cap. And he was like, hey, you're right. And he went to shake my hand. I was like, literally just having a wee, like that. And then he did this little impersonation of me. I said, oh, hi, you're right. I was like, yeah, that's cool. He goes, do you mind if we get a photo? I said, do you mind if we have wash my hands first? This guy was so, it was so funny. It was so
I hope
cool.
That dude's listening.
Yeah, 100% he is. Yeah, he's a mega fan. Yeah. I've spoken to him since then, so
if
that's
that
fine.
If that was you, yeah. Please come forward.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that was so good. I felt like I felt famous for a minute. Famous, a moment of fame in the toilet of Fleet Services.
That's where all the high-end profiles are, though.
Yeah.
Fleet,
yeah.
That's the peak of all services, isn't it? Celeb watch.
So we're going to... This golf course today, we're going to play a bit of that. We've got a little challenge match, and you've got a problem, Dan.
I've got more than one, but carry on.
Your putting is apparently not the thing that's your Achilles heel, and like many, many golfers that strike the ball really, really well. We only talked about this very briefly at breakfast, but we'll go into a teeny bit more detail now. You felt that perhaps you've got a bit technical with your putting.
Massively.
To a point where it's maybe scrambled your head
yeah.
a bit. So I'm going to give you a 30-second putting lesson today.
Yeah.
And then all will be revolutionised, is the plan.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
I just think that when you're younger, obviously I know we're still young in the grand scheme of things. But
no, we're not.
No, you are.
No, we are.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I come in that category now, but you can be the youngster.
When you're younger, you put with no fear.
Because
mm-hmm. You don't care. You hit it back, you're fine, no worries. But as you get older, your handicap comes down. And then you know you should be getting them. I think that's the pressure. You know when you get older, mm-hmm. you need to hold more putts.
Mm-hmm.
And the pressure builds, and then you get technical, and then you go down the wrong route. And you know, I think Dice actually mentioned something to me. You're never actually far away, but when you try and work on things, you usually start going down the wrong way and get further away mm-hmm. from where you actually were.
Yeah.
So it is just stop. Sometimes you do get over technical, and you need to just rein it back in and just go basics and hit some putts, just hit some shots.
It's quite interesting with putting is that. When you try something new for a bit, like it's like you grab a new putter and you go, well, that feels nice, and you hold it and say, oh, that's nice, I'll use that. Or you just go, do you know what, this is so bad, I'm going to go left below right now. Do you know what, this is so bad now, I'm going to do a little forward press and get the ball position forward. Like, loads of different little things and stuff, and it has a limited lifespan. And I believe that when you do something like that, you've had no previous failures with it.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, okay, what's the... what could happen? How good could this be with this new style? And where you haven't got that catalogue of bad shots in history, it'll work for a bit. But like anything quirky where somebody will say to me, like, oh, I went to the driving range the other day, I was slicing it, I just moved my grip round and then it was a little bit better and then it wasn't, so I decided not to do that anymore. Like, everything kind of works temporarily. I think to get a long-term solution, it's less about technique and more about mindset when it comes to putting. And so for me, I've always been a believer in my thought process is I'm an average putter, but I'm never bad. I'm average and sometimes I'm good. I don't have bad putting rounds as such. I have had them, but I'm not a bad putter generally. My thought is always like, how well can I hold it? Not versus will I, won't I? And because puttery is so binary as to it goes in the hole or doesn't, I want to take that variable out and think about when I practice, where am I holding it? Can I hold it in the front? Can I hold it in the back? Can I get one to fall in on the left edge? Can I get one to go in right edge? So I'm almost disappointed when I hold it, but haven't held it how I imagined to hold it. So I try and think of it a little bit differently in terms of like practicing my putting, because I haven't thought about my technique for 20 years.
Yeah.
It might be terrible, but I also don't care because I know that it's kind of all right.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a good way. You just touched on there then about picking up a new putter and you give it a roll. Are you actually thinking about holding the putt? Nine times out of ten, you're not. You're picking it up to see how it feels.
Yeah.
And normally you hit good putts, like you say, because you don't have the bad experiences of your putter.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when we get our own putter, we don't think how this feels. We think, oh, I've got to try and hold this. I don't want to miss this. Mm-hmm. And then your thoughts come in.
Yeah.
So if we can try and take the thought process of, oh, I'm just trying to hit, see how it feels and feel this, and keep that feel going, rather than actually going, I'm going to hold this putt, I think that would help me to just talk about that there. That's actually come out and I'm going to try that because I do overthink it. Mm-hmm. That, just see how it feels. Just give that a go and just use that feeling and try and hold some more putts.
So much to it though, isn't it? So my head's been exploding with information while you two are chatting. I love putting lessons. I love it. I'm shit at putting. That's the problem. So it's weird, but I love doing it. And the mindset of things is...
Sorry about that. We got cut off for a second because my phone rang again. And Harry was going to... What were you talking about?
If you don't want me on the podcast, it's okay. I can leave.
What were we talking
I don't
about?
Know where we got to, but...
You were talking about putting, weren't you?
We were talking putting, and obviously I was listening to you two and my head was exploding with information.
That's right, yeah.
Which... went overload. No, I love putting lessons. I think it's great. And I love studying putting, although it's quite funny because I'm rubbish at putting. But now, obviously, listening back to Dan and things, as a kid, you just putt, don't you? Mm-hmm. I remember you finish round a golf, you just go on putting competitions. Yeah. But there isn't one element or one point you start thinking technical as a kid. I remember as a kid, I never had a putting mirror. I never really did any technique training. It was just putt, just hole putts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the confidence grows from that. Yeah. And I think in the modern world of putting, it has gone very technical. Obviously, we'll come into that. We spoke about the new lab putters that have come in and we've tried, and it does overcomplicate it. But obviously, yes, Dave's a good putter. So you are, because you just focus on putting.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of golfers out there focus so much on, I have to hold the putt.
Yeah.
And I understand that's the logic of putting, but we change our grip and we hold one and go, great, this works. The next hole, we don't hold a 20-footer and we go, oh, it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
But it's actually going, well, you actually hit a good putt. Or didn't you hit a good putt? And that's what I think golfers need to start looking at. It's not about holding. It's did you hit it where you wanted to, or is it simply just a misread?
Yeah, then so you could, I think just from having coached people, I've given lessons to people where I haven't said, right, we're not going to even focus on any technique today. And we're just going to focus on green reading. And that as an activity in itself, e.g. just having a method. So for me, for example, I might coach quite a few people to try and feel the ground or slope when they're walking to the ball to mark it, and just, you know, obviously you try and shut your bag down towards the next tee, don't you, generally, so you haven't got to walk miles offline. So let's say you go and dump the bag off, take a beeline towards where your ball is to mark it, but maybe that's your opportunity to circle the flag and try and feel it in your feet in a dynamic fashion. I think as good as aim point is, I think some people aren't very aware of what the weight is doing when they're static, but most people can feel when they're walking up and down a hill.
Absolutely. I think the modern day golf shoes makes that quite difficult with aimpoint. I struggled a bit depending on what shoes I wear.
Well, you've got one leg ridiculously longer than the other as well, haven't you? Do you know what I mean?
I can only afford one shoe. So but no, I don't know what your thought is. Obviously, Dan does aimpoint quite a bit.
I think there's stuff that you can pick up on subconsciously during the time, so you're not necessarily doing the process, oh, all right, it's my go now and I'll do this. I know with aim point you can do stuff while other people are putting as well.
Mm-hmm.
I would like people to be very conscious of what the greens are doing in a time where ordinarily they wouldn't have been doing nothing. They're literally just walking to go mark the ball. Try and feel it as you walk. I think the side angle, so 90 degrees relative to the target line, obviously gives you an idea of whether the putt is uphill or downhill. But if you said, right, I'm going to walk towards my line now, does it look like I'm walking uphill or downhill? That will give you a really good idea of whether your putt's right to left or left to right. And I'm not sure many people do that. What do you think, Dan?
I think that for me, going back to aim point, that it's really helped me read better. I've never really been a bad reader of a green, but it's allowed me to allow more break, and I now don't miss putts as much or have longer back. I used to knock it 2-3 feet past, but usually got the one coming back. But now I miss less, but it's really helped me to understand more break and how the ball dies in the hole. So for green reading, it's helped. Now I don't necessarily do the full process of aim point, but it's allowed me to see more.
Sure, yeah.
And it's more like taught my eyes how to see it as well, which is really good, and I think it's really beneficial for everybody to do that. But like you say, it's finding your process of reading well, you've got the time when somebody is hitting another putt, keep looking. Try, if it's important, don't talk to your mate. You know, actually read the putt while somebody's hitting their shot.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people get out of the zone, and then when it's their go, you know, rock up, quick look, putt, and maybe they should be processing more information while they've got the chance, really.
Yeah. I've got a question for you. Oh, sorry, man.
Go on, mate, crack on.
No, good on you. You've been very, very...
I was going to say, my pet hate in putting for most amateur golfers is they don't mark their golf ball.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It drives me mad. And you can see a big lump of mud on the golf ball, yet they're not even thinking about doing that. And I think that is just putting 101. Yeah. Stick a marker on your ball and clean it.
Yeah.
And most golfers do not do that.
I used to mark my balls with a packet of fruit pastels. And so I'd put a pastel down, clean it, wipe it down. One day I felt really sick. They'd put some fertilizer down on the greens. And I ate the pastels. And when I came off the course feeling really, really rough. Such a bad idea.
Yeah. How many packs of pastels did you get through in a round of golf?
So if you're going to mark the ball once on each hole,
just once,
you need more than one packet.
Well, you're relying on a couple of putts a hole there. What happens if you three putt?
I don't
need
another
pack.
No.
More pastels required.
No. Well, yeah. You might want a share bag. Yeah.
Share bag.
A share bag. Yeah.
You got a sponsorship with Roundtree's.
Yeah. This could be a thing. Yeah. Chocolate buttons.
All in the sun. That's a bit.
If that
dangerous.
Works, I'll mark mine with a bottle of Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels, if you're listening.
One more thing on putting, I want to go into. Why do we look at the ball when we putt? Why don't we look at the hole?
I think for some people, it would be a good idea to do that, to look at it. I think for an awful lot of people, they wouldn't have ever practiced that to the point where they just don't feel like they could strike it well. So I think, but actually having done that Jordan Spieth thing with a few people where they look at the hole, it's quite good. It's a bit more instinctive and reactive. I think people are more jabby though. I think they jab it when they do that.
But then I think that links back to the technique. Does the technique matter?
True.
I think a lot of the top putters from the olden days are jabbers, quite stabby.
They had to be then, because the greens were more fluffy and they actually chipped the ball more back in the day.
I just look at other sports like darts. We look at the dartboard, basketball, you look at the hoop. I think a lot of the top footballers now look at the goal and not the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're almost focusing on where you want to hit the ball to. Probably Paul Snooker's probably the one. You're focusing on where the ball's actually going to rather than the impact of the white ball.
I think if you think of snooker, you're looking down the line with two eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So two eyes is quite useful for depth perception. And then one eye is really good for, let's imagine you've got a gun, then closing one eye is good for aiming. In basketball, you're face on, and for a free throw, let's say. So face on, so you can see using the two eyes. In golf, you're tilted over and you're not on your target line. And then when you look to the hole, if you look at what angle your eye's at as a right-handed golfer, your left eye is much higher than your right eye when you take the look. So you're seeing it from a slightly distorted position anyway, in as much that you're kind of like... For a lot of right-handed golfers, they don't see left to right putts very well, because obviously when you're stood on that target line, you're going to see outside the line of the ball first and not the left-hand side. So you see an awful lot of people miss right, but also they point their feet straight at their target as well. And then I'd say that's more common, isn't it, from a process of aim. But I think you're right. I think it's anybody that's never done hitting to a target, just staring at the target, they should absolutely do that.
I think it's a good putting drill. And I think it's something that I think a lot of putters should do. Being actually focused, especially the shorter ones.
It helps you get on that external focus side of things as well, because we think if you're going back to the darts, I can assure you now, top dart players don't think what angle they're using the dart at or what point. It's just natural for their focus directly on treble 20.
It's the target, isn't it?
And they're just throwing that target.
Yeah.
They're throwing it. But they're not thinking about how they do it, whereas a lot of, I know in my experience, I'm thinking of how to roll that ball rather than thinking of rolling that ball.
Yeah.
So maybe actually looking at the target or shutting my eyes. I think I'd be quite good shutting my eyes, because then I wouldn't be thinking about where the positions would be. I'd just be concentrating on hitting the ball. In fact, that's all we need to do.
Okay, I've got one for you then. In terms of a drill that I like to do, you mentioned about shutting your eyes and stuff and what have you. Deep breath in. Are you ready?
Here we go. The Dave Bartlett
special. Most people's practice of their putting is just before the game, okay? And that's their practice. So I would call that not practice. I'd call that warm-up and getting a feel for the speed of the greens. So you'll see an awful lot of golf pros not actually trying to hole out before a tournament. Some will, for sure. But just going from fringe to fringe to get the pace is a smart move. and then consecutively hitting one ball a little bit further than the last ball is a good move to get the speed of the green, like the ladder type thing. So it's like, okay, this isn't practice time, this is feel time. This is getting a feel for what the speed of the greens are like today. Right, here's a question for you. I'm going to come back to this bit in a second. Throughout the history of golf, has no good golfer ever said, blimey, they couldn't get used to those greens today, they were so inconsistent? That's always a higher handicap, a poor putter. Like, all the greens are all different speeds. No, they're absolutely the one. The greens were all identical. I've never played a course where the greens have been inconsistent for speed. It's just like they don't, poor golfers don't acknowledge the fact that they're uphill or downhill.
Yeah.
They hugely, the greens are never inconsistent. There might be one where they've relayed it, maybe, recently, and it's okay. That one is different, but that's obvious. But you to not adapt throughout the period of 18 holes is a flaw, I would suggest. So I think, yeah, most people, when they, what do you think? Yeah, you think, Harry?
I agree. Yeah, 100%. I think that is it's always the case of a bad putting round. Greens are rubbish, greens are slow, greens are this, greens are that, and it's actually, you're spot on. It's you putted badly, you haven't adapted, you haven't prepared yourself for what's out there. But I do say it, sometimes it's tough, and I think this is the truth. The practice putting greens do tend to be different.
Yes, quite often the putting green
smaller
is
golf courses. Yeah. I think the high end courses are quite relatable. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, I hate to name and shame, but Parkstone's golf putting green there is on such a slope that there are no
slippy
putts like that on the golf course. So if you went and did your kind of fringe to fringe drill, it's nowhere near what it's going to be like on the golf course, and that's obviously not the only golf course around that has it, so that can be a difficult part.
Yeah,
I think probably looking at here at the moment, the practice green looks slightly different to the main greens, so it'll be interesting to see the comparison when we're out there.
I just I played at a golf course, and I rate it as well, by the way, so this is not me saying anything bad about this golf course, but if you've ever played at the Players Club at Bristol, that is the slopiest putting green you've ever seen. If you wanted to get some confidence before your round trying a wholesome putts, you'd be wasting your time, because it is so slopey. It's fun. Okay, this is not a dig, because I think it's a great way. If I'd love a putting green like that at my course to be able to talk about how you see slopes and stuff and what have you. And to be fair, in its defence, there are a couple of flat ones, so you could practice it. But other than that, it's such a slopey putting green.
Yeah.
It's like really, really good fun. But if your strategy was right, I'm going to hit a load of putts now just before this game, and try and hole some, like, to give yourself some confidence. You could walk off hitting 20 putts and not have got one in, for sure. So I don't think that's a good strategy before the game. Just one more thing on putting then. Everyone, if you do video lessons on putting, let's say you video someone's technique and you look at it, I think everybody has an optimum distance where their technique looks good. And without professing to know everything, but having taught a lot of people, quite a lot of people's putting stroke is quite good from about 10 feet, which is consistent with what they might look like when they might practice in the living room.
Yeah.
If you film that and you look at their length of swing and rhythm, they look quite good at 10 feet. And then you put them at 20 feet and all of a sudden you think, oh, you have the same swing length, you just hit it harder. And then you look at them at 6 feet and you go, oh, okay, you've got the same swing length, you just decelerate. And so for an awful lot of people, they'll have an optimum distance. It might be 6 feet, 10 feet, 20 feet. I think in order to get people's better at their technique in general, is to, if you're going to use video analysis, is to video it from three different distances before you come wading in with advice on what to change. So let's see what your technique looks like from a tap in from 4 feet, 10 feet, 20 feet, acknowledge the differences, and then I think most people's awareness of their swing length combined with their rhythm is pretty poor. What do you think, Dan?
I think you've touched
your head. You're wrong, Dave. You don't know what you're talking about, Dave. You've got a bloody clue what you're talking about, Dave.
I just think that having had a chat with Jamie Donaldson last week about this is the acceleration, the speed of acceleration. If you're taking a long backswing but you've still got the same acceleration as something that is further forward, obviously that's where the distance comes from. But we need to make sure that everything is in time with the longer swing. I think people try to hit it harder or under. Mainly, one of the big things that I've seen is people take the backswing too short, then try and hit it too hard. Well, when they accelerate faster there than they do from a shorter putt, your rhythm's always going to go out.
Yeah.
Try and keep the acceleration the same through each length of stroke, sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's what I think is massive for that.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, since using the CapToe machine, it highlights that so well. I absolutely love it. But yeah, it just shows you straight away your rhythm, and that is always in red for any golfer that's touched it at the moment.
And having not played since November, I don't know. I'm looking forward to actually looking into that this week over here, because I think it will help me massively, to be honest with you.
Nice. Cool.
I feel like I'm going to be a good putter by the end of this week.
I feel like you are, yeah.
If
I feel like
not,
you're
it's
get
going
it.
In that pool behind you then. And it's staying there.
You like to vary your putters quite a bit, don't you? Like you, as in Harry, this is pointed at.
I thought you were about to throw your clubs in.
I do like to throw my clubs as well, yeah. Don't throw your putter because he'll bend it. I just don't like putters. We've had this joke for a long time, and I say it, but I putt better with a wedge.
Yeah.
I always have done. It's obviously where it sits in a different position, but I feel so much more confident with a wedge and putting with that than a putter. So I have changed, obviously, through the mallets, the centre shafted, obviously the lab putters are the ones. They cost about £9 million now.
Sure.
Apparently they make you hole everything, but they don't. So yeah, I think you get lost.
Shout
in
out to Labbutter.
Sorry, Labbutter. No, the Labbutters are very good, but we had this chat earlier. I think there's a specific style of putting you have to have. It has to be quite rigid, which I think for the common golfer it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I think for a very high-end golfer it is, and clearly it's showing because they're being used all over the tour. Mm. So yeah, can't take that away. But you know that you can't. I think putters, you just go into a world of, you know, different shafts, different this, different that, and you just have a headache of what putter do I actually need.
And every time I go to Crazy Golf and I use one of those bullseye style putters, I think I need one of these. Like, if ever you are cluttered in your head and frazzled with technique, go to the Crazy Golf,
get one of
because you're not going to be thinking about your stroke. Yeah. Get that out and just wafted it with that, and you'll get your feedback from that putter is really good. In fact, you know what? I'm going to get one. Hell with it. I'm getting one of those.
I struggle with that Crazy Golf because they always give me the full-size adult one.
Right.
It's too long.
It's too long
for
you.
It's like a belly putter for me.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel a bit embarrassed asking for the kids one.
Mm.
I went to a fantastic Crazy Golf last year, up in just past Preston, called the Flower Bowl, and it was a fantastic little laid out in like a greenhouse.
Yeah.
And one of them was putting through a shed in the pitch black where you couldn't see the hole. You could just see a little bit of where actually like the track is. Mm. So I decided to aim point it. And hold the putt.
No.
I aim pointed the whole thing. Nearly fell over. There was that much slope, and then it just went straight in.
When I was 14 or 15, it was like half term, and I said to a mate of mine who lived on my estate, I said, "Do you want to go to the town today? We'll jump on the bus and we'll go and do the Crazy Golf, and then we'll go to the beach afterwards." So if you don't know Bournemouth, there's a Crazy Golf in the Bournemouth Gardens, which leads down to the coast. Yeah. So it's like you just jump off the bus, go do the Crazy Golf. This guy, my guy, right? he rocks up, gets on the bus. He's got a broom handle putter. He's brought his own broom handle putter. I said, "You can't bring that with you." He goes, no, I'm serious today. I'm going to beat you. I was like, so he's got this broom handle putter on the bus. We turn up. The guy on the reception gives us two putters. He goes, "Don't worry about that, friend. I've got mine here." And he looked at him like he was on acid. And then, so we get
you
on
probably
the
were right. At that stage,
here we go. so we get on the first hole. I was like, "No, you're not. You're not." He's got the putter out, and he's brought a glove. So he's got a glove, and he's got this blooming broom handle thing. I've never been so embarrassed in all my life.
You're building this up though, and me and Harry just want to know the big question.
Oh, I smashed him. Yeah.
You smashed him.
Yeah, I smashed him. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, smashed him. Terrible. Terrible.
You horrible human.
Horrible human.
Oh, yeah.
So you boys looking forward to playing golf today then, yeah?
Yeah, looking forward to getting out there actually.
Yeah, cool.
See what it's like, see what's happening we need to look for obviously some more restaurants as well for October.
Yeah, so this place has got quite a few restaurants on site, which is great. And you said earlier on, you turn up at a place and you get an instant feel and a vibe for the place. This place so far has hugely impressed me in terms of like a facility. Everything is within a stone's throw of each other. So there's a few different bars. There was a promo one. It was £2 a pint last night for Amstel, wasn't it?
We didn't take advantage of that at all, did we?
No.
I must admit, I did enjoy the rum, though. That rum that you did. Actually,
a good bit of Irish pile, wasn't it? Yeah, I think it's good. We've got plenty of options. Obviously, we're quite quiet this time of year. We are before the season.
Yeah.
But even so, there's golfers out on the course right now. We're looking at, and it's definitely
nice,
going to be busy.
It?
I think from next month.
Yeah.
I've already sent a few messages out to guys saying you need to get here, and affordability wise, is some good prices.
It's really good. It's
right
it?
The year. Yeah.
Do you know what? Right. Even if you didn't play golf, for what you can get a golf package price holiday for, you could come here and literally pay what people would pay and just have a nice holiday, even if you didn't even play. Like, the price of this is just so good, isn't it?
Perfect perfect venue as well. So we're going to venture into Mercia, I think, aren't we, at some point in the next couple of days?
Yeah.
But we haven't even seen the outskirts. And then we said yesterday we didn't actually need to leave this place.
No. Everything is on the side.
It is perfect. But as you said, if you're not a golfer, you could stay here. Great hotel, great venue, but still venture out 10, 15 minutes and you're into mainland Spain, really, aren't you?
Yeah.
I think they've nailed it as well with the choice of food restaurants available. Obviously, Italian, Indian.
Fish and chips.
Fish and chips.
Yeah.
Which I know you were quite excited about when we got here.
Actually, I'm not a massive fish and chip fan. Yeah. I was excited about the Indian, because that one gave me hiccups last night, man.
That was funny.
I just cannot stop hiccuping last night.
It's good Indian, though. I don't like Indian.
You're not a massive Indian person.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
You say, I always go for the hottest curry. Always go for the hottest curry.
And I didn't last night.
And you didn't.
And
you
I didn't. Got hiccups. And I got hiccups, yeah. I was just really hungry, though, yesterday. Like, I got up at 1 a.m. Yeah, and you boys were like that. Come on, we're going to have a few. I was just wanting to go to bed, man. I wanted to go to bed at like 7. And then I pushed through to like 9 o'clock. I told Harry to put a bet on Sheffield United to beat Arsenal.
Sheffield United were going to beat Arsenal 1-0.
And they lost 6-0.
So the moral of the story is don't listen to Dave and football bets.
Don't do that.
I had a feeling.
Dave had a feeling.
All good.
Right, cool. So we're going to go find out who's going to win today. I'm actually feeling quite confident. Not that I've played golf at all recently, but I've been hitting some balls during in between lessons and stuff and what have you. My swing feels like it's actually in quite a good place today without putting undue pressure on myself. And Harry, you're feeling all right?
I'm a bit lost. I had a stinker last week, didn't I? Yeah. But you did come to my rescue a bit, but I've got a big swing change
place. Yeah, you've had no time to prep that.
We had about 10 balls, didn't we, with a very big change. So I'm excited to try it on the range and to try it on the course. I think there's going to be a few wild villa shots today.
Sure. I mean, the villas actually look quite close, don't they? Like, the villas are within range.
100% they're in range.
Yeah, 100%.
So hopefully I've got enough golf balls with me.
Dan, you feeling good?
Yeah, I mean, I know somebody with a villa on just around the edge of the golf course on the 18th, so please don't hit that.
I'll aim for that
just
one.
Please don't hit that. I've got to go and see him at work when I go back on Friday. So, I'm feeling right. Same as you, I've not played since Morocco, hitting the ball all right. Just have to see how the putter rolls. That's always my game. You know, wedges, usually an okay standard, but then there's no point knocking it to 3 feet if you can miss it.
Let's make sure we have a look at that then.
Yeah,
yeah, I think for a lot of people it's the dusting the clubs off for the first time for a few people back in the UK because the weather is going to be that. But if you've been that golfer where you just kind of keep it ticking over the winter, even if you're not playing, if you can get out, hit some balls, good opportunity to do some work on your mobility, get your fitness up, get ready for the season. I always get invariably a few people come out of the woodwork right at the start of the golf season and it's a bit of panic, like, oh my God, I went to the range, I'm terrible, sort me out. And it's like, oh, you had a long time to get this ingrained over the winter period, so
round of applause for the golfers that kept it going.
Fair play. Some people love it, don't they, in the wet and the wind and stuff, and they see it as a challenge. I've never been a great rain player. It's not my favourite thing to do.
So I've got an interesting subject. If we can just touch on it.
Yeah.
So where do you? Obviously, you're at Parley, you two.
Yeah.
Down at Parley. I don't know what the membership is kind of like there.
Mm-hmm.
But where I'm at, there is obviously, I don't fully understand it for the golfers. They're paying for something that was shut for 6 months.
Okay.
In fact, or not that shut every single day for 6 months, but it's been shut a lot. And it's not just our course. You know, I know that these prestigious courses down south that have been shut and losing a lot of money when they close, because the green fees are still up £200 a round.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the golf membership going to look like? I hope it's just a freak winter we've had in the UK, but do you think that membership is going to have to change? Do you think?
I think that's a really good question. I think that the, I say elite courses, but the top courses in Dorset that are members clubs won't care, in as much that when they own the club, they are wanting to preserve. Now, whilst they might have 700 to 800 members, you might have 50 odd that will be annoyed at that.
Yeah.
Those golf courses aren't necessarily catering to those people because they do want to protect it. The proprietary courses, however, that are trying to make budget and trying to make a profit or even trying to get to just zero to operate, that becomes a problem because you're never going to keep everybody happy. And having been in that world for quite a long time as a head pro, it's like you've got half of the people saying, oh, bloody hell, it's closed again. When are we ever going to be open? And then you've got it when it's open, almost the same people saying it shouldn't be open, like it's not playable, etc.
You don't see them on the tee sheet.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's I know we've had a few people like that, and I'm not singling them out here. At the end of the day, the weather's not great anyway. Do you want to go and play? If we left it open all winter, how many times would you actually have played?
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing. But you know, we're shutting it for a reason.
Yeah.
From a business point there as well, you look at the golf courses, they have to generate the membership fees to keep the place running.
Of course
they, you know, your wages still need to be paid, the reception, the green staff need to be paid, and that's when they need the greenkeepers the most in the bad weather.
Definitely.
So, yes, you're not playing golf, but the club needs money more than ever. And obviously in the summer, you'll get a few more pay and plays to come through, but the money, it's almost like the golf course knows we get X amount per year. This is our budget to spend on staff.
Definitely.
And that's what golfers forget. Yeah, it's a business.
I think they need to play more in the summer to get the money's worth throughout the winter.
And a lot of them do, don't they?
Definitely.
A lot of them get their value.
They do, and playing once a week in the summer, is a membership really right for you? Because if you're looking at playing once in a winter, there's a chance it's going to be short.
Mm.
If you play three times a week in the summer, you're getting a really cheap golf membership. Because your price per round is usually under £20 a round, sometimes under £10 a round. And that's when you have to think about it. Maybe I should play more in the summer than actually not being able to play in the winter. That's where you're going to get your money back.
I had an idea for a membership a few years ago, and I haven't 100% fully thought this through, but I was at a golf course before, which was very wet, but it was brilliant in the summer and the spring, and not bad in the autumn. But in the winter, it's like, it gets wet, it closes. Could you sell 9-month memberships to people, and there would have to be some sort of incentive for making sure that they re-sign up again so that you could budget accordingly? So you're almost saying, do you know what, we've got 3 months here of no pressure. If you are a club member, however, and the golf course is playable for that 3-month period, your green fee for that time will be £10, let's say. Let's say it's a course which is £40. Their membership is £1,000 a year, and they pay the equivalent of what £1,000 a year would be over a 9-month period. And then for 3 months, they're still a member, but the course isn't open for a membership as such in terms of, say, a season ticket.
Yeah.
And all they do is just like, okay, if you're open here, you can come and you can play, it's £10. So if it was shut, all the staff could not be there. They'd have to pay the staff, etc. And then they could almost run that business as more of a seasonal business, like a holiday park.
Yeah.
What do you think? Terrible idea.
Dave, that idea is... I cannot
there's
believe...
there's some logic to it, but then I also think... I think most golfers will look at going, I'll just pay for the 12 months.
Yeah.
I just think, unless it's a massive saving that you're going to do, which, you know, honestly, you're not going to, because...
3 months.
For 3 months, it's... Yeah, it's not going to save you much. People will go, well, I'll just join. I'll just pay it. And I think, yes, the staff don't need to be there, but in theory they would, because if we get one of those nice weeks... You now need staff back in, and you haven't got staff.
Mm.
The greenkeepers still need to maintain the golf course every day.
You'd still be paying a 12-month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who are you going to get as a member of staff, especially as a pro? Who are you going to get that's going to go, right, you're already having a 9-month wage.
Mm.
And where's the other 3 months coming from? What? I know I just started out on my pro route. Job came up like that. I'd be concerned. I'd still want a 12-month wage, which means a 12-month wage got to come from somewhere. So I was thinking
more about the membership side of things then. I was thinking more from a membership thing rather than, say, shutting it all down.
Just operations-wise, there might be staffing it, who you're going to get in for that. Well, you've got a 9-month job, go and fend for yourself for 3 months. The wages would have to still be a 12-month wage because they'd be taking 3 months off.
Because it's quite interesting, and you see places like over here, so in Mercia, etc., and what have you, then these places will be... There's a golf season, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, a lot of these restaurants and bars and stuff will be closed at a certain time of the season, so there's obviously a way in which these businesses can operate for a season.
I think maybe that the logic to that is you don't have a membership. You just felt like the course is out here, I'd imagine they don't have members.
You sure, yeah.
It's very much a resort location, so everything's pay and play.
Mm-hmm.
So you obviously pay your rate, so maybe that's an option for a UK venue to go, we have no members. It's just very much, it costs this amount of money to come and play.
And for your local area, if you just have a discounted rate, so in Blackpool, I don't know about you down in Bournemouth about local attractions, but if you go to the Pleasure Beach in Blackpool, you get a local citizen kind of rate. If you go to the Tower, you get a local kind of rate.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you do that for golf courses, if you live in the 5-mile radius of the golf course, you get a green fee for this rate. And then maybe outside of that, you pay a higher rate for your visitors.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the way of
We had a course, didn't we, down ours. Unfortunately, it's going to be closing at the end of the month, but they do it like a credit card system.
Yes.
And they don't actually, you don't join the club, you become a member, and they have three categories, gold, silver, bronze, and you put X amount of money on your card, and then it just takes off the price of the round of golf. So if you're on the gold, you'd have to put, say, £2,000 on your card, but every time you play golf, you almost get half price.
Yeah.
And then that way, the money is always with the club, but whoever joins doesn't lose the money, and they can just keep using it as and when. And I think it's a good idea. I think it doesn't work when you want official members.
I don't think it works when you've got a senior that wants to play five times a week.
This is
because they're, you know, they'll get really good value for their 5-day membership. Isn't it interesting? Like, a 5-day membership is cheaper than a 7-day, and generally your 7-day members are the ones that can only play weekends.
Yeah,
and they can play maybe twilight golf, and then your 5-day membership is typically 80% of the 7-day membership, and those golfers play all the time.
Yeah. I think the memberships is something they need to look at and have more options. I think a few clubs now, somebody told me that they've had a weekend membership.
What, just Saturdays and Sundays?
Dorset. I can't remember the course. He said he's just paid for a weekend, which is incredible.
Yeah.
Why are more people not doing that?
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Mm, and that's it. I think the old school 5-day, 7 days is gone now, I think.
We run on a flex membership, which is like the old Playmore Golf membership. Mm-hmm. Well, no, Playmore Golf still exists, but... So we run that, and you use a certain amount of points. So it's 8 points on a Saturday morning, 5 points after 11, 3 points after 5, or, you know, things, sorry, 3 points after 5 points after 3. So you get a lot of our members on a Saturday. You get the ones who are 7 day up until 11 o'clock, and then it goes quiet for visitors, and then you'll be able to get more members out in the afternoon who are all on the points. I just feel, from my personal opinion, it just offers too much, because you can still win your club championship, you can still win your majors. I just think that you're kind of pushing everybody towards that, but you only get 100 points for £399. So is that should that be made for a seven should that be developed better as a 12-month membership, and then your 7 and 5 day go, because you're going to do more on them?
Tricky one.
Like you say, memberships need a mix up. They're going to need a mix-up, because if the weather's going to continue like that back in the UK, there was a stat that my boss pulled out last week. He said, if you added up all the water that fell between the 1st of July last year and whatever day he counted it last week, I think it was last Tuesday, if you added all the rainfall just on the fairways, you'd have enough water to fill 40 Olympic swimming pools.
Wow.
Now, imagine all that coming down. So... if we have another winter like that, it's just going to be the same again.
My worry is, do we have a summer like that?
Exactly.
What's the summer going to look like this year? Are we going to have a heat wave, or is it going to be pretty grim like last year?
Well, the Parley Gar Park had swans swimming on it, didn't it?
They actually still
had
swans
swimming on there.
They do.
That was fun.
That was when we were in Morocco, wasn't it? You got a photo.
It hasn't improved since.
Has it not?
They're still there.
Well, it's quite near the river, to be fair. Yeah. Like the river kind of burst its banks, and then we've got swans on there. There's probably some fish in there as well now.
Wow.
In the car park, flapping around. We ain't got to worry about that today, boys, because today we're going to go, I'm going to chuck some sun cream on, shorts are out of bounds post legs,
can get some
sun on there. Yeah, 66. Here we go.
Yeah.
Right, thanks for listening, peeps, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. Enjoyed thanks that. For coming, Dan.
No problem.
We rate you highly.
Thank you.